Well, yeah, I know you've really been missing something here in church for the past few months. No doubt about it. And a lot of people have been asking me for updates, and you're all very happy this morning to see the return. And I'm speaking, of course, about my flip chart over in the corner of the... Now, if you're wondering where that nice puzzle map is that Tim put together, that's hanging proudly in my office. If you ever need to go look at that again, please go. Feel free to stop in anytime and check that out. That's a nice map, too, and very helpful. But as we begin Holy Week today and on this Palm Sunday, I want to get a quick lay of the land as a reminder, you know, what's kind of going on and where it's going on. And so if you take a look at that map over there, made with great precision, by the way, Kurt, and Karen, took me a long time. You'll see four bodies of water that really define the territory. This is the Holy Lands, in case you were confused. The four bodies of water in blue, and they are the Mediterranean Sea up to the west there, the west corner. And then the Sea of Galilee is that little circle up to the north. The Dead Sea is that oblong thing down at the bottom with a D in it. And then connecting the two seas is that scribbly line, like a string on a balloon, right? That's the Jordan River, correct. Those are the four kind of bodies of water that define the territory, and that's pretty much it. Maybe 70, 80 miles as the crow flies, and that's pretty much the territory. That's the area that, you know, Jesus lived and walked throughout his life, and he spent most of his time during his life on earth up in the northern region, up around the Galilee, the region of Galilee, and the Sea of, on and around the Sea of Galilee. That's where he spent most of his time. But he also had relatives and friends, certainly, down south, because Jerusalem, maybe you can see, the city of Jerusalem is down just above the Dead Sea down in the southern region, and he would have traveled down there to visit friends and relatives and also to attend festivals annually, probably, down in the city of Jerusalem. And in about probably the 33rd year of his life, the third year of his earthly ministry here, he knew he had to make a final trek, one more trek down to Jerusalem, back to Jerusalem. It says in Luke chapter 9, verse 51, quote, "As the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem." Now, when that comment was made at that point, Jesus and his entourage, they were up north in the very familiar area of Capernaum. Capernaum is at the very top of the Sea of Galilee. Maybe you can see it there, CAP. That was where Capernaum was, and that's where they were. And at that point, they made a very resolute decision to head south and to head back down towards Jerusalem. Now, if you follow the red line on that fabulous map over there, you'll see that they left Capernaum. They probably made a farewell stop in Nazareth. N-A-Z I have written on there, if you can see that, just off to the west side of the Sea of Galilee. They most likely would have made a stop in Nazareth. And then they definitely traveled through Samaria, which is just off to the west bank of the Jordan River. They would have traveled along the west side of the Jordan River, continuing south. And they would have stopped. They definitely did stop and, you know, preached and taught and healed along the way over the several days. And there was a point several days on that journey where they crossed over to the east side of the Jordan River, if you see that, very briefly. They didn't do that for very long, and they did that perhaps to visit specific people, unclear why they did that, but they did cross over to the east side of the Jordan River very, very briefly, But they quickly crossed back over and headed in immediately right across the banks in through the city of Jericho. And during that little brief stop, as they passed through Jericho, a couple cool things happened. They healed blind old Bartimaeus. Remember that story? They healed Bartimaeus along the way. And they also visited, Jesus visited with, a wee little man who he saw up in a sycamore tree. Zacchaeus, right? That all happened. Those two things happened as they were passing through Jericho just after they crossed over the Jordan River. Now, after passing through Jericho, Jesus and his crew continued on to the village of Bethany. Now, this is where he tended to stop and stay anytime he was visiting Jerusalem. He tended to stay in Bethany and stay with his very close friends, Mary and Martha. That's right, Mary and Martha. And just last Sunday, and Grace did a great job. She's back in the nursery, by the way. We're not the nursery attendant. Her and the little trip guy are back in the nursery. Grace did a good job last week. And last week, we talked about and sang about how Jesus, kind of as a preview of sorts, had raised their relative, the brother actually, Lazarus, from the dead. Raised him up from the tomb. That happened right there in Bethany. That's what happened there. And Bethany was a very short distance, maybe 2 miles outside of the city. For them, that was a short walk, you know, to walk 2 miles. That was right outside of the city of Jerusalem. And you can see that at the lower end of the map. Okay, so now just imagine it. Just imagine it. Here they were, Jesus and his crew, after 3 years of ministry together, and having walked in total during those 3 years, it's estimated over 3,000 miles that they walked all over the region, 3,000 miles. But now their journey, their wandering around, had ended. They had reached the end of that journey. It was over, pretty much over. And it was time for Jesus to enter the city. And remember, Jesus at that moment was probably the biggest celebrity, most famous person in that region. He was very, very famous. It was like he was a superstar in that region. And it was time for him to make his triumphant entry into the city on that first Palm Sunday. Now, in our responsive reading today, in your bulletin, from the 118th Psalm, most likely written by King David, 1,000 years prior to the arrival of Jesus, David identifies the Messiah, Jesus, as the cornerstone of our faith. The cornerstone who the so-called builders, who would have been the religious leaders, right? The Pharisees, the high priests, the Sadducees. They, of course, rejected him. But King David also foresaw the people would celebrate his arrival with boughs in hand and with a festal procession. And then 500 years later, roughly, we heard in our first reading today, the prophet Zechariah, he was still waiting and watching for the coming of the Messiah. Now, if you happen to be at our men's Bible study last Wednesday night, you know that Zechariah was one of the 12 minor prophets in the Bible. And Zechariah assured the people in and around Jerusalem that the king is coming. He's coming. Now, how did he, Zechariah, foresee the triumphant entry of the coming king? Would it be with great armies and chariots of fire? No, right? No, just the opposite. Just the opposite. Zechariah says this: "Rejoice and shout, Jerusalem. Your king comes to you, righteous and victorious, but lowly and humble, riding on a donkey. And so sure enough, 500 years later, we heard in our gospel reading today from Matthew chapter 21, after leaving the town of Bethany, they came to the smaller village of Bethpage, just outside of the city, right outside of the city. And that is where they borrowed a donkey. And Jesus fulfilled that ancient prophecy by riding on its back into the city. And how did the crowds respond? Now remember, this was festival week, right? This was Passover week. The crowds in and around Jerusalem would have been enormous, huge crowds. And how did those crowds respond to Jesus? They loved it, right? They went wild. They loved it. And think of it, for the disciples, if you were part of that entourage, it probably was the best day of their lives. Imagine that. The crowd was on their side on that first Palm Sunday. It had to feel really good. That had to be a great feeling. But was it going to last? Would it last? No, no. Yeah, the king was coming, but he was on a mission. Jesus, the king, understood that the first Holy Week did not end with the entrance on Palm Sunday. Nope. That was just the beginning. He had to complete a very difficult mission. And so the Bible injects a very brief but very interesting story right at this point. We heard it. It's so brief you can almost miss it. It's a story that's repeated in all four of the Gospels. It's the story of Jesus very aggressively, almost violently, turning over the tables in the temple and driving out all those who were buying and selling there. Remember? Now, John's gospel gives the added detail of Jesus actually using a whip, like a bull whip, to drive out all the people and all the animals. How do you like that visual? Some people think that story almost doesn't make sense. It doesn't seem like it could be true, right? Because doesn't seem like it's in character with the nature of Jesus. So why would that story be there? I mean, it's true. There's so much said in the Bible describing Jesus as the Prince of Peace, right? And all that. That's true. And Zechariah accurately portrayed him on that first Palm Sunday as, you know, humble and lowly. Yeah. But the king, the Prince of Peace, was also on a mission, and it was a tough one. And Jesus told his disciples in John 13, verse 36, we might repeat this on Thursday night. He said, "Where I am going, you cannot follow." He made that comment on Thursday evening, the night of the Last Supper, and the night of this scene, same night of this scene in the Garden of Gethsemane. We're going to celebrate that on Thursday night, don't forget, down in Fellowship Hall. And then after that, of course, he was arrested and he was crucified on Friday, right? This Good Friday. We'll be here for that too, right, Bear? We'll be here for that. Sanctuary will be open from 9 to 5. But the mission would not be complete until Jesus then went somewhere where we could not, and thanks to him, would not ever have to go. We could not follow. On Saturday, Jesus descended where? Into hell. We read about this in the Apostles' Creed just now. After he died and was buried, but before he rose again, what happened? He descended into hell. Why? Why? Well, no one could follow him there, that's for sure. So there's no firsthand account of it. And that's why I believe that the imagery of Jesus clearing the temple is so important. And that's why I think it's there. And that's why I think it makes sense. It does make sense that Jesus could do that. I actually personally believe that's why that story is there. Okay, so think of it now. Jesus with a bullwhip, right? Just wiping things out, clearing it out, driving all the bad actors out, and declaring on that Monday morning, probably, that this temple belongs to God. I'm in charge here. This is my Father's house. That's what he did when he cleared the temple. And that's what he did when he descended into hell. He cleared it out. He defeated it. That's the vivid imagery of Jesus when he cleared that temple. And it's there as a preview for all of us of Jesus harrowing hell. He harrowed it. He descended into hell and he conquered it. He tore the gates off the walls. He stared the devil in the face and said, I'm in charge here, not you. Jesus went to hell so that you and I never will. And then, and only then, he resolutely set his sights on Easter. Amen.